Sweet. And we are back. College football offseason, it kind of always delivers, Brent. Brent Rollins joins me every week. There's always a new topic. There's always something to talk about. There's so much that goes on. And we're going to cover Texas today and talk about their chances. A couple of guys that are very intriguing from the Heisman Trophy winner with Travis Hunter and his draft and just where he's going to be. And I'd be interested to hear your take on that. And then I have one too. And then Jalen Walker. So two tweeners that have like different multiple positions that could be interesting. But I think we start with the SEC and the Big Ten, the news in college football, because we know that college football is always changing. And we know that once we expanded a little bit, we're going to continue to expand. Like that's just part of it. Like we went from 2 to 4 to 12. And Brent, I don't know how you feel about it, but like it's a matter of time. It's like the NCAA tournament. Like we started at like a little, and then it goes up a little bit more, and then it goes up a little bit more. And I think that's, again, you start to see television rights, more money, more viewers. You can do more streaming partners. There's all these different things that are going to continue to come into this. And so it's only a matter of time before it expands to more. And they're having meetings this week. And basically, there's two people that have a say, and it's the SEC and it's the Big Ten. And everybody else, y'all can just kind of take a seat right over there. And like when I let y'all talk, I'm going to let you talk on this podcast. But like they don't really, Brent, have a say.
No, they don't. And unfortunately, they do, but they don't in a way because of the way the power structure is. And the article was from Ross Dellinger, who writes for Yahoo Sports, and talked about how the meeting is they're going to expand to either 14 or 16 for the new version of it.
Yep.
Auto qualifiers for each league. So it might be a sort of 4 for the Big Ten, 4 for the SEC, 2 ACC, 2 Big 12, and then Notre Dame, and then a plus a G5 if it's 14.
Well, you just glossed over that. Like, that wasn't a big deal, homie. Like, that's a huge, that's that, like, to hear that out loud, like to think about the SEC and the Big Ten, as much as everybody's like, they have too much respect, there's too much clout for them. Okay, hey, guess what now? We're going to expand this to 14 or 16, and we're going to give out more buys, but we're also going to give the SEC and the Big Ten 4 automatic bids, not 1, 4. Like, that's crazy. The ACC and the Big 12, not surprising. Like, all right, guys, like y'all can come eat, but y'all can't eat the full meal. Like, y'all can't get the apps and the dessert. Y'all could have the main course. So y'all get 2. You guys get 2 bids. Group of 5, you get 1. And then an independent gets 1. And I think that's interesting too. It's basically, okay, this is for Notre Dame. Like,
Yeah,
come on in,
Notre
Notre
Dame
Dame.
special.
Yeah,
They're
Notre Dame
their own
special. They
entity.
have their own little thing, but they got to be in the top 14 as an independent to be in that spot. But
Yep.
like you talk about people that were ticked off and get frustrated and didn't like the way things were. This ain't gonna make your life any better. Like, this is just gonna expand that more now.
I very much so. And it's one where I think the biggest question with all of this is when you think about what it is that you really love and cherish about college football. And for the longest time, the regular season did matter. You couldn't lose at all. And sometimes, even if you didn't lose, it didn't matter, a la Auburn and what was that? Oh, like 4 or something, like whatever that year was that they went undefeated and didn't make it into the championship game. Like, but now it's
Five.
one where if you get to an auto qualifier with 4 in each of those conferences, the regular season now, while it still it matters and you've got to get one of those 4 bids because you've got a bunch of teams in there in each conference, it devalues it. It just does. And championship game gets weekend or championship weekend gets altered, I think, a lot because of this. There might be sort of play-in games, I think he was mentioned in the article of what was talking about. So it's change. I saw in the article too that he said the group of 5 leaders are, quote, prepared to fight to expand their automatic qualifier spot. So maybe they're trying to be like, hey, we need 2. I think
Good luck.
for me, by the way, yeah, good luck with that. I think if I'm the group of 5 teams, I want my own playoff.
Well, no,
I do.
yes, I yes, that would be awesome. That would be fantastic. But they got to pay you for it, and you got to be able to make money off of it. And that's, as much as that sounds great, Brent, they're probably not going to make money. The TV deals are not going to line up, and it's not going to be like, oh, heck yeah, we're going to pay you, you know, $20 million, $30 million. Like, it will be peanuts. And I think that's where they would argue. But, like, the interesting thing about it is, like, last year the SEC and the Big Ten, you know, had their discussions, and they basically said, like, wait a minute, like, this is how it's going to be. Like, we're going to run this. We're going to make decisions on behalf of everybody. And everybody kind of acquiesced to them because they said, we're going to go elsewhere. So that, like, it was a power move. Like, the SEC and the Big Ten are making power moves. They're like,
yes,
like, this is, we run this, just let it know, or else we'll split off, which is crazy. And then, so this isn't for next season. This is for the next season. Like,
yeah, 2026, you mentioned the money. ESPN starts paying $1.3 billion per year through 2031.
And that's the and the SEC and the Big Ten are the ones that are partaking in this, and they're driving the ship. So, like, everybody else is along for the ride, and it's kind of like, I gotta jump in, and if I don't, I'm gonna die. Like, I'm not gonna have this opportunity. And so it's crazy. I think this leads to more play. I think this leads to more conference expansion. That's what this is gonna lead to, because, again, more money. You can put more people in a conference. It's going to get weirder and weirder. We're going to continue to lose rivalries. We're going to continue to lose conferences, for gosh sakes. And I just don't, I don't think we're done yet, which, again,
it's, that was, it's actually my question, was where does it end? What's the end point for this?
Because AFC, NFC, Big Ten, SEC, like, that's what it's going to be. And everybody's going to start filing in one of these two categories. And I think it's going to be very interesting, because there's going to be a lot of teams from the same state, and you're like, okay, why did you go Big Ten? Why did you go SEC? And I think it's going to be very much predicated on who's the fit. Like, for this, for instance, like, you can go ahead and think about this and put this in your hat for a little while. Like, North Carolina, the Tar Heels, obviously, is a big brand. North Carolina fits in the Big Ten better than it does in the SEC. Like, NC State fits better in the SEC. Like,
why do you say that?
Huh?
Why do you say that? Why, like, are those teams?
NC State is ruckus, like, diehard fan-based football. Like, they are packing out the stadium. It's awesome. It's an awesome environment. I'll make the same analogy, Brent. Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Like, Virginia's wine and cheese. Like, bring a picnic basket, sit over here, like, kick it. Like, we're kind of – there's a game going on, but it's, like, not really that important, really. Like, there's some, like, president's statues over here and stuff like that, if you really want to see something really cool. Like, and then there's Virginia Tech that fits the unbelievable, crazy, raucous football atmosphere. Like, I think those are two things that I think people are going to think brands a lot of times, but I think it'll be fits too. And which one fits in a league? And listen, don't give me the academic bull crap anymore, because that's got to go away. Like, we're done with academics, please. Like, let's not act like we're a non-professional sport. We're basically
professional. This is minor league football.
Minor league football. We're getting paid, but I just think that it's going to lead to that, Brent. That's where it goes next, which is cool for some people, and it's going to be cool to talk about, and it's going to be awesome because some teams are going to make more money, join cool conferences, have other things, and we'll continue to lose rivalries and parts of the game that you love so much that we've already lost, and we'll continue because it's a monster that just keeps eating because it makes more money, and it's going to keep expanding because it makes more money.
And the first note and sort of question, thought, all this about that I made about the article was just greed and how money is driving everything and every decision. And the thing, when you think about it too, is, and I'm in academia, like, that's my day job. I am a college professor by day.
As a doctor.
Yes, not a real doctor, according to many in my family. But it's they figure out how to make money, and they figure out the sort of business end of things. Like, there are certain professional schools, one of which I teach, where basically the fourth year of academics is you pay the school to go work for free because it's internships or it's externships or it's part of that sort of functionality of training. So to think that these academic institutions and the presidents that run them aren't, in essence, CEOs of major corporations, and they're going to think like that, that you're crazy. I always think back to, there was an article written, I want to say it's like 2011, 2010, something like that, in the Atlantic. And it basically went through the history of the NCAA and how it became what it became, and how they realized that the sort of the tax sheltering and the money that they could make off of TV, like all that stuff led to what it is, what the current, what the existence was prior to the sort of Pandora's box with NIL reopening back up. So as long as this means, in the end, as long as it means more competitive football games and, you know, players getting their fair share, all those things, I think I'm okay with it. But it does, like, it's going to not resemble the game that everyone has fallen in love with all these years, and it's going to become more NFL light, NFL 2.0, whatever you want to call it.
Well, and the only thing that keeps that away, though, is the fans. Like, the fans are still so in love with their team and your university and the time you spent there and what it means to you, that it's always going to mean something to you. And I know so many people that talked about, man, if you start paying these kids, I'm out. Like, this bull crap. You do this for the love of the sport. No, you ain't. Because you know why? The same reason I ain't out. I ain't got nothing else to do. Like, I'd rather sit on a Saturday and watch game after game after game than be doing anything else. Like, it is awesome. It is fantastic. Yep. And it's just fun. And after touring the country for all those years, like, the pageantry at all the different schools and the different traditions, it's just awesome. It's so cool. And in the South, like, where we live, like, this is a passed down thing, man. Like, yep. This is
a way of life.
It's a way of life, but granddad takes son who takes grandson, you know, like, they're all together, like, you're going to games and tailgating, and it's your Saturdays in the fall. That's like, everything else works around that. Life, you don't do weddings in the South on a Saturday unless you're stupid. Like, it's not what we do. Like, you don't do that. And so, I mean, it's just a way of life. And I don't think that's going to stop at the passionate fan bases. I think you lose, you know, components of it. And I would be very interested to see and talk about the regular season, because are we at a situation now, if you keep expanding, where, you know, three or four teams, it doesn't really matter what they do at all, like, which stinks. And that's the opposite of what we want, you know, but it's the ever expanding, you know, money is there, but the end to me is two conferences, AFC, NFC, all, they get all the money.
Bigger versions of them.
Yes, bigger versions. You'll still have the little pockets of the different versions, and you'll still have the crossovers, and it'll be more confusing, I promise.
Yes.
But it will be, the traditions won't change. Your colors won't change. Your mascots won't change. Your Saturdays won't change, because you ain't got nothing else to do. Just like my loser butt, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to love every second of it. Like, it's just awesome.
With apologies to your friend Jesse Palmer, who joined us last week, I'm not really catching up on Bachelor or Bachelorette or Golden Bachelors. Sorry, not on the menu. Not at my house.
No, not good to go. Whatsoever.
But I do think the question of when does it end? When is there a 5 or 6 or even 10 year period of kind of the same? I try to remember back when that's actually happened. Like, the longest time where you haven't had some sort of conference realignment, it's been kind of almost always ongoing year after year after year, where it's, or at least the possibility of that discussion and the change, because the money is driving everything.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, you already had the Pac-12 dissolve, you know, I mean, you've already seen it
reappear in some way or something like that.
Nah, right? The two-pack doesn't exist. It's not real.
Yeah. All right. So next up, two players that in draft circles are getting a lot of talk, and deservedly so, and especially sort of first round talk. And mainly there's a dichotomy with each of these players. And first and foremost is Travis Hunter, as you know, the Heisman Trophy winner, who I see in terms of consensus board is up there 1, 2, 3, number one on a lot of people's big boards as the best overall player. Where do you think he should play? Do you think he should be Mr. Full-Time both like he was in college? Like, I've really wanted, and you and I really haven't discussed this at all, but I've really wanted to hear your thoughts on what do you think he should end up eventually being? And is he, depending upon the position or both or whatever, is that a top five pick?
I don't think you can do both. And listen, he proved he could at Colorado. This ain't Colorado. Like, this is about to be the best of the best. And I honestly think by watching him, I think he also struggled because he played both. I don't think it helped him develop as much as he possibly should. I don't know if this is going to be controversial or not, Brent, because I don't read a lot of stuff. But when I watch Travis Hunter and I go back and I watch almost every single one of his games, and to me, when I watch the tape and when I watch him on both sides of the ball and I just say, where do I think he's better? I think he's a better receiver. Like, I think that's his future. And I'm not saying he's not a bad defensive back. I think he's got really good technique. I think he's got he can stick to people. He's got great he's a really good corner. He's a great corner. He's a really good corner that can stick people, can match movements, can I don't know what he's going to run, and I'm very interested to see what he runs, cuz I don't think he's a blazer. I don't think he's going to be a crazy fast 40.
He's not sub 4.4.
I don't think so. I don't see that. But so I say that, but when I see him at receiver, I see the elements of body control. I see the elements of hands. I see a lot of savvy off the line of scrimmage with the ability to change routes. And I do think playing corner really helps you when you play wide receiver and vice versa. I think it, like, because you know exactly what you're staring at. So you know exactly the drills they're working on. You know what the things are important and how to use them against you. And I do think that's beneficial for both sides of the ball. And I think that's why he plays with a really good high intelligence level. But when I'm drafting him, I'm going to draft him on one side of the football. I think it's going to be amazing to see the discrepancy, because I bet you it'll be close to split. But I think his watching him and his body control and his hands and his elite traits, I think his elite traits are more suited for wide receiver than they are DB.
I thought for a second we might actually disagree on this, but I agree. I think he's a receiver first, and I think he's a third down, come in every now and then. I do think that you have to use the elements of both, because I don't know, and this is my question watching him, is I don't know if he's elite enough individually or elite enough at one to be that high of a pick. Lack of true physical element to his game that to me is might show up in the pros that hasn't necessarily shown up in the college.
Well, and I think we know this as a coach too, Brent. Like, reps get you better. Reps make you grow. When you're splitting time with two different things, it's harder to get better at one thing than the other. And I mean, everything you do usually at the college level is I'm developing my release. I'm developing my ability to stop in three steps. I'm developing my brain when it comes to this. And you're splitting time. And while it's a cool novelty and it's awesome, and he won a Heisman Trophy because of it, like, that's why he won a Heisman Trophy. And it was fun to watch somebody, but and his endurance was unquestioned and his athletic ability is unquestioned. I think when you get to be a person that does the reps over and over and over again, it becomes more second nature, and you can see the skills. I just think I see more raw skills and more, again, those traits that really carry over to making you an elite wide receiver is to be able to change your routes up and to be able to change your, you know, the appearance of the way you release and the way you release, to be able to contort your body. Listen, there's a lot of guys that are burners. They can't contort their bodies. Like, it's just not possible, and they don't see it. That son of a gun sees it. He feels it. He honestly does a great job of going through contact too for a smaller guy. Like, he's not affected by people grabbing a hold of him. I think it's
play strength.
Yeah, he's got good play strength considering he's wiry, you know, like he's a slimmer guy.
I will say the slimness part, I can't get the image out of my head. We saw him on the sideline, I think it was right the year before, right his senior year high school, he was on the sideline of one of the Georgia games, and he looked like he was about 155 soaking wet. He was a lean dude. Now, granted, he's obviously grown and got more physical. I will be interested to see what he weighs in at the combine. But the other thing for me is, I think in terms of sustainability, what has been shown in the league is that if you get to be a good receiver, barring injury, you're going to be a good receiver relatively consistently. Cornerback, you kind of fluctuate. There's an instability to sort of performance year in and year out because of so many factors around you. Whereas if you're a receiver, as long as your quarterback for the most part can do anything, you can be consistently productive. And best, and also, who's getting paid more right now? Receivers are getting paid more. And if I'm him, I'm really good at both, and I can make myself a lot more money at one than the other. Yeah, I agree. But I the thing for me that's going to be fascinating is does he fall to, say, 5, 6, or 7 because they don't know what to do? Because an NFL team doesn't definitively know, hey, that guy's a corner. I'm going to go stick him at corner game one and be fine with it, that kind of thing. Does his ability to play both create questions?
I think he will. I think because here's the thing. You know, when you're making these decisions in these rooms and you talk to these guys, like, they fall. Now, listen, people fall in love with their guys. Like, that's my guy. They fall in love with them. But they also now, I think we're starting to see more and more, like, these people that are making these decisions, they want to know at the top as much as they can what they're getting. And I think when you have a little bit of guesswork of what is he, you know, you start questioning builds, you start questioning size, you start questioning durability. Like, he also missed games. Like, that's part of it. And that's, I mean, you play both ways, you wear and tear. You talk about building a body. It's hard to build a body when you're running that many miles on the body too. I ain't never seen in my life a ripped up, shredded long distance runner. Never.
Yep.
They might be lean as crap, but you look at a sprinter and you're like, muscles popping everywhere. Like, and then you look at a long distance runner and you're like, dang, eat a cheeseburger, bro. Right. Like, I mean, that's just kind of the way you feel about it. So I think it definitely will create some indecision. It won't kill him. But the talk of him being number one, I think when you know what you're getting probably from other guys, I think it'll keep him from being one or two, or even maybe even top five. I could see him going maybe in the 5 to 10 range, which is pretty dang good, by the way. Like, nothing to freaking sneeze at.
I agree. And also I think it'd be fascinating to the value proposition of him if he does give you snaps on the other side of the ball. If he's, say, an average to above average on one side and gives you snaps on the other side of the ball, the value from that perspective, the sort of the nerd in me looking at the contract and the value that you're adding, that's fascinating to me. Because if he can give you 10 really good snaps as a corner and he's playing full-time as a receiver or vice versa, that's
pretty cool.
Roster spot. That's an extra roster spot. That's money saved. That's value. That's fascinating to me.
And he'd be doing his college coach proud because Prime did it, which was pretty cool to watch.
Very much so. All right, next one is one that I've seen in terms of big boards as high, I think, as 3 and maybe as low as 50 or 45. And that is Georgia defender at this point. I'll call him that, Jalen Walker, who kind of is in that hybrid. You know, at Georgia, played inside linebacker a ton, and then on third downs would play on the edge. And what is he? What does that translate to in the league? Is that a top 10 pick? Where does that get drafted? Where do you think he ultimately should be, and where do you think he maybe is best suited to be?
Well, it's interesting because this has got Travis Hunter feel to it as well. And I think when I watch Jalen, first of all, he's not a bad off the ball player. Just like Travis Hunter's a good defender. Like, I'm not saying he's not. I like he brings punch. I like the way he runs. He's got good instincts. He'll slip somebody. I've seen him slip people without even looking at him, which I really like. Like, he's just got a good savvy and feel for for space and people around him. But again, who am I paying, Brent? I'm paying edge rushers. And here's the guys, to me, the guys that make the most money and make the most impact. Like, there are speed rushers that pin their ears back and they go get the passer. There are power rushers. And then there are rushers that are kind of the whole deal, like Hendricks from the Bengals. Like, he is awesome. He is really good. Like, I don't think people know he led the NFL in sacks last year?
Probably not.
Like, and it's not because he's a freak athlete. Here's what you have to have as a pass rusher. If you are a great speed rusher, that is awesome. If you are a great speed rusher that can also turn speed into power, that's another check in your box. And if you're a great pass rusher that can turn speed into counter, that is big mother freaking check marks. Like, I can beat you. That's like playing against a guy that can beat you at the rim in basketball, in the mid-range, and at the three-point line, which is a dying art in today's world, obviously, because mid-range is becoming more and more obsolete.
Right.
But I can just tell you, guarding the guy that can shoot the mid-range makes him way more effective as a driver, because when you put your head down and go, I got to bail and I got to meet you there. It's the same thing as playing offensive tackle. So I think Jalen Walker, when I watch him, I think his best chance to really accentuate all of his tools. Now, listen, he's not super tall. He's my height. Like, I did a, you know, I was working with him in that bowling alley thing that we talked about, you know, months ago. But I will say this, that sucker's long. And I'll be interested to see his arm length, because he's got some long arms. And
he's not DP T-Rex.
He is not me. I am T-Rex man. So again, I look at optimization of tools, maximifying what they do best, what he does best, and what he does, I think, at the highest level that gets you paid the most and that is the most important position. It ain't an off-the-ball linebacker. Is it nice to have a guy that you can spy a quarterback with that are all these freaks nowadays? Yes, and he can do that. Like, he's a guy that absolutely can do that. And he's a guy that's not going to kill you in coverage. So it brings you some versatility for sure, like you were talking about with Hunter. But where he's going to make his bread and where he's going to be best, to me, is a guy that can beat you in three ways as a pass rusher, which there aren't a lot of guys out there that can beat you in all three.
Yeah. Not at all. I've seen a lot of interesting comps for him recently. So, by the way, I'm assuming you think he should be sort of an edge player primarily.
Yes. Yeah, I'd put him on the edge.
Can he be a three-down edge player in the league?
Yes. Yes, he can. Because here's the thing. When I watch college and NFL football more, there's less and less maulers at the point of attack. There's way less guys that just, like, offensive line play has gotten very, like, get in my way, mirror your movement. Like, it's just not a bunch of maulers. And he absolutely has enough punch. He's got good punch. Like, he's got good power. Is he huge? No, but he's got enough power to absolutely, and technique to lock in and to be able to play the run. And again, I think football's changed. You're just way less like, I'm asking you to sit here and not move. And there's so, like, you got to be able to chase these quarterbacks and read them and run and do all these, play in space probably more than ever at that spot. Like, there's so many moving hat games now, and there's so many guys that can move at the quarterback spot. Like, I think it's a bigger advantage to have a guy that's a little bit undersized with more speed that can run people down and more versatility.
A la former Georgia edge player, now Super Bowl champion, Nolan Smith.
Yeah. He's
very, very similar. Nolan Smith as a run defender
is way better.
Power, way better. Just, and it was something that was, that screamed at you on his college tape in terms of his power as a run defender.
Freaky power. Freaky power.
I will say one thing that I would push back on, all the things that I think he should play the edge. And I think he should play on the edge all the time, because I think his instincts as an inside backer aren't good. Like, he's just not a natural cut through lanes, see what's going on, avoid blockers in the sort of tackle to tackle space.
Yeah.
I think the NFL will eat him alive at the inside backer spot.
And I agree.
The team would get frustrated.
I didn't disagree with you at all. I definitely agree. That's where he's absolutely going to be used best and most.
Yeah. So, like, it's now the other question. If you had the choice, you know, because based on how you're looking at these things, if I said you got Michael Williams, Georgia product, Jalen Walker, edge guys. Who's your pick?
Jalen Walker. Not even close for me.
All right.
I like Michael. I like his physicality. I think overall he's, you know, Trayvon Walker obviously was at Georgia, was the number one overall pick. I think overall he's probably a little bit Trayvon was more physically gifted. Michael might be a little better football player, might be what I would say. But Michael doesn't have – I don't think Michael's like elite trait-wise. Like his quick twitch, like you got to be able to go around people. And if you can't go around people, you better be able to get edges and work flanks and really dominate with your hands. And I don't – I think Michael's still got a lot to learn in that area. Like he's good. He's got great – he's got a great skill set. Don't get me wrong. He's got a big, strong, tall, long body.
Very long.
And he shows me some flashes a la Texas where he'll get that outside hand. But the thing about Michael, I want to see the great ones, Brent. They can go right, left, right. They can put one, two, three moves together in sequential order. Like I got to catch right hand, make them use left hand, catch left hand, and then maybe spin off. Like to be able to put two or three moves together, I haven't seen that from Michael enough. Like I want to see more of that. Like I got one side, I got an edge, I got an advantage, I take it. Okay, now they bail and they really try to push me by, I spin. You know what I'm saying? Like
yep.
I don't see enough of that I really, really love to say that I could put him above Jalen, who I think has a lot more of those natural instincts as a pass rusher to get to quarterbacks and to make crap happen.
And the reason I asked that question was because you see a lot of mock drafts and things right now where they're really close together. And it's like, hey, what are we doing here in terms of edge? And they're kind of clumped together. So I think
system, scheme, fit, all that matters too, because obviously yep. Michael way bigger, way stronger. Are you going to slide him inside some a la yep. San Francisco where you need to be able to take on, you know, different tackles and play different techniques? That's a different animal. Like I'm not going to ask Jalen to play a four eye, like against a tackle. That's not the world I want him living in. So different systems obviously would change that.
All right. Last but not least, for the topic of the day is we're going to talk about who you had in your top five as the numero uno team. That would be the Texas Longhorns, who finished last year 13-3, lost to Georgia twice, lost to Ohio State in the college football semis for the second consecutive year, which, by the way, Sark, though, 38-17 in 4 years, first back-to-back double-digit win seasons for Texas since 2008 and 2009 with Mack Brown. And the 2009, I think, was the one where they lost to Bama and the
Colt McCoy.
Yeah. So, in general, this past season for Texas, would you classify that as a disappointing season? As about what you expected? How would you, when you look back at their season this past season, overall, what do you think?
I think it was a really good season for Texas. Like you said, to me, back-to-back Final Fours, which is a big deal. Like just going to the playoffs last year was a big deal. You know, then this year doing it again is even bigger. I don't think you can tell me one single team in the country that benefits more from NIL. Like Texas is numero uno. Like they have more millions like in a couch cushion right over there. They just sit down on, oh, crap, here's another couple mil. Like, right? Like it's just they've got money and they can use it. And I think they are using it and they're doing a great job of using it. And that's not an insult. Not an insult at all. Like they've benefited tremendously from it. They're going to continue to build their roster from it. I think OC DC combination, one of the best in the country. We can talk about where that ranks, but it's very, very high near the top. You know, they're keeping and retaining their guys at a very high clip, which is really, really good. I think because they're going to spend money and they have resources to be able to do that. They're continuing to recruit at a stupid level, super high level. And again, that's going to continue. So I think Texas is in a good spot. I think Texas is in that mixed Michigan spot right now. Like Michigan didn't have a lot of success for a long time. Cracked the Final Four, you know, cracked the college football playoff, got there again, get over the hump. And I think that's where this Texas program is at. So I think all of that's working together, good coaching, good young players, nice NIL, all that to say that Texas ain't going nowhere and they're going to be a consistent mainstay. And I think they showed you that the last couple years.
In terms of the losses and additions, portal wise and or just the pro, it's mainly the pros with them. Obviously, yeah. Quinn Ewers gone, wide receivers Bond and Golden gone, offensive linemen, almost their entire offensive line is gone in terms of going to the pros with Banks, Williams, Majors. Gunnar Helm, I think, is a big loss for their offense at tight end because there's not necessarily a waiting in the wings guy there. Jaden Blue, and then their defensive line. And they lost a lot along the defensive line with Sorrell Collins, Broughton, and Bill Norton, who had a lot of snaps for them, sort of being out of eligibility. That in terms of people that they lost, I think that's when you talk about retaining their guys, that's one where any portal losses that you see, it's not like guys who were getting crazy high levels of snaps.
No.
It's not significant contributors. It's not key players. But the additions from the portal, I think it's Brevard from Purdue, Travis Shaw from North Carolina, and the canoe kid from Ohio State, all along the defensive line. So that to me is when you know you're doing sort of roster management, the combination of recruiting and portal the right way is when, one, if people are leaving you, it's to go find playing time because they can't play for you. Or not necessarily they can't, but they aren't. And then two, when you have a deficiency like that where you have four or five guys leave in one sort of deal like Texas did along the defensive line, that then you go use the portal to fill that depth in addition to what you have returning, that's just great roster management when it comes to that. So
yeah, and again, you can do that because they can pay people. They can keep them. They can keep people happy. You want to know something that's crazy, Brent? And I'm pretty sure this is right. The last offensive lineman drafted from the University of Texas, what year do you think it was?
Oh, this was, I mean, wasn't it like it was a long time ago? Like maybe 20 years ago? It was
before I was drafted.
Ooh.
They haven't had an offensive lineman drafted since 2002.
Two. Was like, that
Mike Williams, fourth round pick to the Buffalo Bills.
Like, I knew it had been a long time. I remember seeing that. And now you're going to get multiple in the first round, possibly.
Well, and that's what you see. Like, Texas enters the SEC, perfect timing with NIL, but the big guys up front are different, man. Like, they are big. They are physical on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They are enormous. They are huge. Yes. They look like Georgia and Bama did for years and years and years. Like, that's what they look like. They look elite, and that's – I think that's the difference, and they'll have two tackles that are drafted in this draft, maybe even first-round picks both. They could be, you know, definitely first couple rounds, and that's where they've changed it around the most, I think, with Texas.
The other thing you talk about the NIL, they did pretty well in recruiting. So obviously I worked for Rivals, so they were number one in the Rivals team rankings. They tied with Oregon, I think it was, for the most five stars. They had four, and primary of which – is a player that they plucked from the state of Georgia in Justice Terry, defensive lineman, 6'5", 280 kid, who it was down to Georgia and Texas, and he basically said in an interview, Texas brought the better NIL package. And he is now a Longhorn, and he's one who, I mean, will likely get a lot of snaps for them very early. But they also got some wide receivers, a couple five-star wide receivers. So – when you combine the recruiting with the portal and keeping guys and the combination there, your roster is in the championship or bust kind of category.
Well, and here's – when I look at Texas, okay, and this is why I have them number one coming back next year. Both coordinators are back. I know I have a quarterback, which when you start looking at the other teams in college football, the teams that just played for the Natty, both those guys are gone. Now, I know Ohio State will reload because that's what they do at that position as well as anybody in the country. But you look around a lot of the other teams that were in the college football playoff, a lot of their guys aren't there. Like the great quarterbacks are going to be gone. And does anybody doubt Arch Manning? I think everybody knows he's going to come in, and we saw him in a spurt last year, and I think he's only going to grow and get better. We know that he's athletic. We know that they'll have wide receivers around him. I thought Ryan Wingo showed that he's going to be a big play guy. Like, he's going to be really, really good. And I know they'll continue to find more. I know they'll have big bodies up front. I know they'll have Sark. And then I think defensively, I feel really good. Like, Anthony Hill Jr., Simmons being back. Colin Simmons is a freak.
He's as good as it gets.
Like, you've got stalwarts at positions that you can say upper end defensive lineman, pass rusher, that is what you need. Like, secondary that plays a lot of bend but don't break, a lot of guys coming back that played a bunch of snaps that you know their name. Like,
Taft coming back was huge.
Huh?
Taft, the safety coming
back.
Yeah,
and I think people probably look at him and say he's a white boy, he's not very good. Like, in the back end, but he is really good. Played corner in college, plays safety now, elite instincts and feel, like, really, really good in the back end, and a guy that you have now also that with all that experience that can communicate with everybody else, which is important. It's so important. So, I mean, Texas, if I'm a Texas fan, I'm jacked. I'm excited about the future because we ain't going nowhere. Like, you are set for a run. And it's going to be a fun ride, and it's not going to be long before the Texas Longhorns get themselves a national championship.
So do you think Arch performs to the level, and Arch Manning performs to the level that the Texas fan in the smallest of corners, and maybe not even the smallest of corners, but in some corner of their brain says, man, if we had just played him all last year, maybe we win the whole thing last year too? Do you think he steps up and just plays that well instantaneously, or do you think there will be some growing pains?
I think there'll be some growing pains. I don't think he's a top five quarterback in college football. Like, I mean, and there's not a lot of great guys like we talked about coming back, but I mean, I wrote down a bunch of names. I was just thinking about like the best quarterbacks coming back, and Klubnik is going to be up there, and Aller's going to be up there, and Nussmeier's going to be up there, and Nico is going to be up there, and DJ Lagway and Pavia and Jennings. Sam Levitt, I think, is a freak show. I think he's going to just destroy it and take off. Carson Beck. Like, I can write down a bunch of names. I'm going to put Arch up there in that conversation. And again, his offense, I think his weapons are always going to be good at Texas. And I think his offensive coordinator is really, really good. So I think he's going to be in the conversation for being a top 10 quarterback. He's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC. I just don't see him being the best. I don't see him jumping in there and all of a sudden you go, holy cow, like, he's a can't-miss guy. He's the Heisman Trophy winner. I don't see that.
And we'll get to find out pretty early because if you look now, granted, with the SEC, the schedule is the same, but it's flipped in terms of road and home deal and maybe order and how when and where you play the teams. But – Texas goes from having at Michigan early on to game one rematch against Ohio State. That's as good as it gets to start the season.
I mean, it's crazy.
That's as good as it gets.
And if I was these teams, I would have pulled out. Like, why play these games anymore? I mean, when you don't get rewarded for a better schedule, like, it's another thing I'd love to see change throughout college football is rewarding, obviously, when you're going to go challenge yourself out of conference and play in tough atmospheres and tough teams. Like, that's – I think you should be rewarded for that. So, it's great for us. Like, it's awesome for us, and it's going to be fantastic. But, yeah, how about Texas 2 years in a row, like, willing to do that? Like, that's a tough ask, man. And they just played, you know? Like, that's what's cool, too. They just played and going to play again with new characters, but – they know Jeremiah Smith's going to be there.
Four will be there. Two will be on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of their schedule, though, having to go to Florida, and so they'll have Ohio State first and then three scrimmages, San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston. But then going to – I mean, it is. And then going to Florida – with Lagway there versus what they faced. You know, they faced like their third string guy last year that couldn't really do much of anything. Unfortunately for him, he's put in a tough spot. That'll be an interesting game for them. And then Oklahoma. Oklahoma might be a whole new Oklahoma this year with Mateer. And then they obviously got to go to Georgia. So,
I mean, here's why I just say with Texas, if I'm Texas, if I take away Ohio State and I put in a booger eater, like I'm guaranteed to go to the playoff.
Yes.
I'm going to the playoff.
At Ohio State, you're 10-2 at worst.
At Ohio State changes my schedule. But here's what I like about the schedule if I'm a Longhorn fan. I start the season with a ton of time to prepare for Ohio State, who's losing a bunch. I have a bye week before at Florida, which is the toughest place I'm playing in the beginning of the season. Like Oklahoma's my rival, but it's a neutral site. Kentucky, at Mississippi State, yes, please. Like you want them any day, seven ways to Sunday. You play Vanderbilt at home. Guess what else you have? Another off week before you go at Georgia. So there's a lot more ats, and there's some tough games that are ats, but then you throw in Arkansas at A&M will be tough. But if you're talking about like one of the tougher football schedules in the country, if you took Ohio State off that thing, that'd be gravy. Like that would be an awesome schedule to go make the college football playoff. So, you know, they win that game, they're in the college football playoff probably. Like I would probably be saying that week one, because you're getting that huge feather in your cap. You know Ohio State's going to be good. And then now you start to move towards, you know, beating some of these other teams, like you said, a scrimmage. And then if you lose a couple along the way, you lose a couple, but you're still very much in the mix and going to the college football playoff.
All right, so here maybe last question that I have. Given that first game, Texas at Ohio State, and they played in the Final Four a year ago, Ohio State obviously won it all. If I said Texas or Ohio State versus the field, winning it all next season, what you taking?
Texas and Ohio State versus the field?
Yep. One of those, you take those two, give me the field, or give somebody else the field. Which one are you taking?
Last year, we asked this question to start the season with Georgia and Ohio State, and I would have said Georgia and Ohio State. I think I said Georgia and Ohio State.
Yep.
You're giving me the two best chances. I take if you give me those two teams, I'd take those two teams and I'd give you the field.
Yep.
Which
I tend to agree, just because you know, especially for Ohio State, that they have the best offensive and defensive player in the country.
Yeah, but I will say the Ohio State coordinator's deal is a big deal.
Change, a lot of change.
And they have Patricia now, which, okay. And Hartline, okay.
Yep.
I mean, it ain't what they had. That I can promise you. It is a significant downgrade at both spots. Not a downgrade. That's an unfair way to say it. It's a significant loss of experience and longevity and versatility. Like I think you immediately got less versatility, less experience, which sometimes can be a negative thing. And guys that have a lot to prove to step into that spot that are filling shoes of guys that you're saying are Hall of Famers, elite of elite in what they do.
Yep. That's all right.
All I got too, brother. We'll be back here again Thursday, man. Like this is fun. This is fun to, you know, hit teams. You know, we'll still be getting some more guests too. Story time with Palmer was fantastic. He was great. Got to share some of those, but plenty more college football, man. There's plenty to discuss, and we will get through all of it with its coordinators, players, you know, teams that we're going to continue to talk about for the season, articles, all your college football needs. Keep sticking with us.